Okay, last topic for the day, premium wafers, and presented by Anne.
Thanks. So this paper looks at a submission that discusses the terms of an insurance contract that allows a policyholder to stop paying premiums in specified circumstances. For example, if the policyholder has been disabled for a period of time. The policyholder continues to receive the benefits that were originally promised under the insurance contract. And we're referring to this situation as a premium waiver in this paper. And that's what we mean when we say premium waiver. I understand that it's a term that's used in other ways as well, but we mean this situation. So the insured event covered under the contract, the primary coverage, differs from the event that entitles the policyholder to a premium waiver. So you might have a primary coverage that is a term life contract that covers the mortality risk of a policyholder, and then the premiums might be waived if the policyholder becomes disabled and is unable to work. So the submission asks whether the risk relating to the premium waiver is a pre-existing risk of the policyholder transferred to the entity by the contract and therefore is an insurance risk, or whether it's a new risk created by the contract. So to start with, as a preliminary note, we just want to say that the definition of insurance risk in IFRS 17 hasn't changed substantively from IFRS 4, and therefore it's not expected that the practice in determining whether a risk is an insurance risk would change. In summary, in this paper, we think that a waiver of premiums, if a specified event occurs, does create insurance risk. And we observe that consequences of this are that if you had the inclusion of such a waiver in an investment contract would make that investment contract an insurance contract. And the inclusion of such a waiver in a contract that would be an insurance contract anyway could affect the quantity of benefits provided by the contract and the coverage period. So that would affect the recognition of the contractual service margin in profit or loss. Hand it over to the TRG for their views.
Roman?
Yeah. To not only raise my arm if I have to mention something where I have difficulties. I agree with the set conclusions. I think it's clear. It helps also to emphasize again that the assessment of insurance risk and the definition of insurance contract is not changing. While I think you have emphasized this on different occasions and places, you, from time to time, I meet someone who is questioning this. So it cannot be said too often. And all the conclusions, I think, I agree. It's also helpful to make people aware that the quantity of benefits and coverage period as a result of exercising of waiver can change. That is something I fully agree with.
Thanks for that. Kevin?
I think there are very few people who read this paper and were surprised by the conclusion. And I think, you know, Anne, you make the point that probably we should have already known this from IFRS 4. Which is right. I think one thing I just wanted to pick up was the link between one of the consequences from this paper and paper 11 that we'll talk about tomorrow. So, you know, in paper 11, you've got quite a few things about examples of is something insurance or not. You know, again, you make the point the definition hasn't really changed in IFRS 4. But I guess one of the things that has changed is IFRS 4 lets you unbundle in a lot more cases. And so to come to your example of an investment contract with a premium waiver becomes insurance, today the consequences of that are quite different to what they may have been before, you know, because you might have just split out the premium waiver portion and accounted for as insurance, whereas now the whole thing comes into the scope of insurance. So I feel like that may be connected to S33, where you're talking about loan contracts which have a small amount of insurance risk in them. So we should probably just think about this example in that context as well for investment contracts with premium waivers. But I think the analysis is as we expected it to be.
Okay, thanks. Gail?
Yeah, I would make the same point, actually. So, yes, even though the definition of four hasn't changed, the consequences are quite significant. I'll just comment on 15A. Clearly, it's only if the risk is significant, just for the completeness of investment contract going into insurance. Clearly, would make it under the standard. I would agree with what Kevin said. It's the broader application. And it's not just investment contracts, it's the people who aren't around the table or watching this TRG who may potentially get caught by something that is now insurance that they may not think is actually my bigger concern than the people who are insurers writing these contracts. But I agree with the analysis.
John?
I agree with the analysis and conclusion here. Just want to comment on the implication for the revenue presentation here. So what it means here is that, you know, if you have a waiver of premium, the benefit become a claims, and then coverage will pay the premium. So in terms of P&L presentation, yeah, you know, there will be some gross-up effect, and I think that's how we should read the paragraph B120. It defines insurance revenue as consisting of premium. So that definition of premium would include this benefit outgo, yeah, from the coverage. Yeah. Is it how it should be read?
I'm not absolutely sure what you mean by a sort of gross up. I mean the cash flows you'd include in your assessment of the cash flows expected, you know, your expected premiums and any expected waivers. And your revenue calculation will, you know, if those expectations then change because you get different waivers from what you had expected, then all of that is going to flow through revenue, as we've just have we had the revenue?
Yes.
Sorry. Brain's going. But the paper that talks about, you know, change experience adjustments or changes to premiums, that would all flow through the revenue figure, just as IFRS 17 applies. I mean, there would be nothing special about these waivers that would change the application of IFRS 17 in how you calculate revenue. I don't know if that is different to what you are calling a gross-up. I suspect it might be. You wouldn't pretend that you'd received these premiums that you'd waived.
So the mechanics of the standard and the requirements do not tell you to have an artificial gross up of pretend that you have a claims and then pretend that you charge the premium that you just waived. At the end of the day, paragraph B120 says that, you know, the premium that you charge would be the revenue. We do not do an artificial gross up, although maybe some people have this in mind when they think about those contracts, but this is not what the requirements are saying, and this is not also covered in this paper.
JP?
Yeah. I generally agree with the risk related to premium waiver in insurance risk, but I'm just wondering how we account for these premium waivers in the journal entry under IFRS 17, because currently we have this kind of premium waiver practice, business practice, but to record this journal entry, now we are just treating, you know, this premium waiver as payment of claims. But in that case, under IFRS 17, I think revenue and expenses might be inflated.
Well, as I said, I think
we have to. But we have alternatives. You know, we have thought about this issue internally, and we thought, you know, by just you know, reflecting those, you know, premium waivers as cash inflows rather than, you know, treating the payment of claims. Currently, we are using, you know, these premium waivers as a, you know, payment of a claim to the journal entries. But in that case, you know, by just adjusting cash flow assumptions, you know, we can just solve this issue. But I just would like to clarify on this, you know, accounting treatment relating to the premium waivers. There might be some kind of diverse views on this one.
Is it not the thing that you're dealing with here is the absence of a cash flow.
Yeah.
So essentially in the determination of your, when you're looking at the policy, you're going to say, I'm expecting 9 premiums and 2 months where I won't receive a premium and then 9 more premiums. So I'll account for the 18 premiums, and in the 2 periods where I get nothing, I account for nothing.
Yes.
There is no cash flow.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't account for it as a cash flow out and a cash flow back in. There is no cash flow.
Yeah.
Okay. You are saying that we are treating them as you know cash inflows rather than
zero.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I think that's a problem because I think the people in Canada read it the other way, read this paper to mean the other, to mean that you would treat it as you have disability insurance, you have disability cover, and you're paying a claim on that disability cover, and then the person happens to give you the money back as premium. They thought that that's what you meant. So I'm going to have to reread this paper and come back.
Okay.
Yeah, this is how I read it. Yeah.
That was our understanding.
Yeah, the paper did not cover, was not intended to cover presentation aspect. It was the question was whether it is insurance coverage, whether it is insurance contract, which it is. So
it
I
is.
Think that there is no disagreement here.
No.
In terms of the presentation, I think that the requirements are quite clear, what goes into premium and what goes into revenue. Well, we are always open to listen to future submissions on this one. We'll consider this.
Seems that we clarify always a lot, but then people asking different questions based on this answer. But before we conclude, I think we need a summary.
I think I heard that people agreed with the analysis in the paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anne. And thank you all for your contribution, for your comments. And I think we will start tomorrow at 9:30, same room. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.